Good evening, Kabbalah Time, a live broadcast with Rav Lightman. Hello, Rav Lightman. Hello to everyone. Hello, Racheli, and hello, Dudi. We're going to be talking to you today about a very hot and interesting topic, relationships. Is there any chance of living together? And maybe we'll start that, Racheli, you deserve a mazal tov. You're getting married in 2 days, right? Thank you very much. And maybe we'll go from that point and ask Rav Lightman. No, you said that there's some report on divorce, actually. Wait, that's why we're asking. How we can prevent that from happening? What is the recipe for a successful relationship in our days? My teacher, Rabash, would say that the recipe for good life is concessions. Concession. That each concedes to the other. For what? For everything. Everything. And then you can get along. Otherwise, not. That's how it is. Now, go and interpret it for your whole life, all different cases that happen, but that's what we have. Conceding. That's great wisdom. Patience. The big question is, how to concede? How to step on your ego, step on one's own ego, and take care of the other. The wisdom of Kabbalah says that you shouldn't cancel the ego. You have to give up the ego, the pride, all those things, and to subjugate oneself, and that's how we can exist. Otherwise not, because each with his increased ego is not capable of standing the other after a year or two. It passes even beforehand. Today we're used to what we see with the youth. Really, they're replacing each other. They're not even a month or a week, but within a day. Therefore, if we want to live together, the foundation for it must be concession. It really sounds nice and logical, but nevertheless, what's the recipe here? We're egotistical. Our whole nature is the ego, where each wants to hold himself and above everyone. And if, for the time being, in the beginning, we are capable of conceding to each other, right? If you meet someone, are you willing to give up in order to be next to him, to exist together, to live together, to get along together? And then later, everything is over, and you don't want to give up. And this is where the whole wisdom is. I can give up to a certain degree. What's that limit? There's a limit. It's my territory, and well, your territory isn't worthwhile starting as a relationship until you start conceding. Therefore, there's always divorce from all sides, and you hear about divorce everywhere you go. People are not capable of living for many years together. I understand this. I understand it. I've been through life. I've seen a lot before me. Couples that separated. And nevertheless, I think that none of them found something better than what they had. None of them. But eventually, what we need to do is find some form of existence together, especially when there are children, and somewhat concede to each other. Yes. Is there such a thing that are like twin souls, that if that couple, I'm getting married, that it's from above that it was decided? No. It's not souls. We need to understand that there's no matter of souls, that the Creator is sitting above and arranging for these couplings. It's all nice stories for romantic novels. Because what we heard from you is that you can simply connect X and Y, some stranger with another stranger, and they'll get along. If we will open a good course for relationships in couples, and we'll prepare the guys and the girls in a, the right way, we could say that it's almost certain, we could say, if it's a good and right course, that we'd be able to cancel all that they received from home and all the habits from their father and their mother, where they saw the examples, so that we will eventually be able to erase those examples of man and woman from their parents and bring them the right examples that will be able to sustain themselves over time. Shlomit is asking, there are so many advisors for relationships and methods. I wanted to say, what's the secret for good relationship according to Kabbalah? How is it preferable to other methods? The wisdom of Kabbalah deals with the egoistic desire of a person and helps him rise above his desire, despite the fact that it deals with raising a person above his corporeal, beastly desire to a spiritual desire. And the corporeal desire remains as it is. We can see how even in philosophers and scientists and the great people of this world, their desire, their egotistical desire, throws them in all kinds of directions. We could see this from the biographies of all the so-called celebrities and famous people. With Kabbalists, a Kabbalist, contrary to someone people think, is a regular person, but he develops in him a very special attitude towards rising above his ego in the upper perception of reality and to adhere and get closer to the upper force. And in this world, despite the fact that it's contradictory to what the general folk think, but the reason of the landlords is always opposite the reason of the Torah. So we need to understand that with Kabbalists, they engage only in the spiritual matter. And in corporeality, they're people like everyone. And there is nothing more or less than regular people. Although they rise in spiritual degrees, meaning they acquire additional spiritual degrees called a neshama, a soul, and they develop those spiritual degrees until their soul develops in order to attain spiritual upper worlds. That's it. But still they are living in this world in relationships. It could be that it's not so also for them getting along. But with that, they try to move their life as in a relationship also with certain concessions. From their attainment, their feeling of the upper reality, does it give them principles for life? There are principles, and I'm telling you, the principle is simple. Concession. I don't understand how to reach concession. I understood the principle, it's clear to me. But how do you come to concession? It's through education, first of all. Education throughout our entire life, prolonged education that should accompany a person in his relationships. It sounds that only Kabbalists can really be married and happy. No, I'm not certain, because a Kabbalist is a person who's engaged in his dealings with the upper worlds, and that which is corporeal is like a regular person with all that he has. As he loves all the things in this world, he likes comfort, sleep, eating, sleeping, sitting, and all the things that are in this world, that are customary to do in this world. He's not a person that the lusts are erased in him for our different senses, but he's capable of really conceding. He's capable of conceding to another person, especially not in his regular bodily life, his earthly life, but more in the spiritual life. There, his concession is truly on every desire that he has, in his spiritual desire. But in corporeal, he doesn't concede. And in his corporeal matters, he tries to do it, but our problem is that we won't be able to understand the Kabbalist, his behavior, in his corporeal life. You can't, because somewhat we continue the spiritual degrees and extend them to our corporeal degrees, to our corporeal life. And it's not so. I lived besides a great man, the greatest Kabbalist in the second half of the last century. Today, we don't even have anything close to that concept. And this is a person that loved certain food and to sleep in a comfortable way on a good mattress and to get dressed correctly and comfortably, etc. And he enjoyed all those things, even though he was 80 years old and more. And I don't understand why we think it needs to be any other way. Maybe to kind of dig a little bit in those examples that you saw. When you saw him, for example, relative to his wife, did you see something different than other couples? No, but he had to also concede a lot to his wife. She demanded for him this and that, and it wasn't comfortable for him because he thought that he would engage in something else at that time, but he would concede. I remember that you told me that he really loved her until his last day. He cared for her and was in the same room. He slept beside her, and there was great love. Yes, yes. We see we're talking about Rav Baruch Shalom Alevi Ashlag, the Rabash, our teacher's teacher. Yes, he was truly in soul devoted to her, really. Let's move to our days. This morning, a report was advertised of the rabbinic courts. And relative to the last world, we're just rising. 10,841 couples got divorced last year. The trend is just growing, especially in Jerusalem this year, became the capital of divorce. How do we explain this phenomena of divorce? Why? The phenomena of divorce is clear that it needs to rise all the time because our ego from year to year grows. And when the ego grows, I can't stand people. Therefore, I'm not capable to simply stand them. And so much so that I'm willing to be alone. And we arrange our lives so that they will be as comfortable as possible to be alone. I almost don't need a thing today in order to serve myself. Also, as far as my food and my clothing, cleanliness, my bed, if I have a little bit of money, I can serve myself, take care of myself with the help of people that I hire or use their help, and pay them. I don't know. I don't see any problem with it. So here, Eli is asking, maybe marriage is an institute that has passed. If we don't correct our egoistic desire, it is certain that we won't see people continuing with their relationships, with their couples, as couples. Other than that, we don't want children today, right? We know this. The public doesn't want children. Women who always wanted to get married and wanted to have children today don't want to get married, don't want children. This phenomenon is very clear. The ego, our ego, which is growing, is what gives us these phenomena. If I make a calculation of a young man today, who, I don't know, is working, making a living, if he makes a calculation, wait, to live now with a woman all my life and to concede to her compared to, like you say, I have all the conditions around. It sounds like it's preferable. Why should I get into that problem? Here, Yogev asks, I'm 27. The whole world is sitting on my head and waiting for me to get married. Why is it worthwhile for me to get married at all? What does it give me? Yes, I understand them. I understand them. Because it's not like it used to be best in the past when I was young. That was 50 years ago, let's say. Well, so everyone got married. Everyone brought children to this world. Everyone worked. A person who was a man that didn't work and not married, there's something wrong with him. That's why it seems to me that we will come, as usual, to a great crisis in this too. And our whole life will be altogether one multi-crisis that will be so great that we're going to sit and ask, what's happening on all sides of me? I am in a breakage everywhere. And what can we do? And we'll understand at that point that we have no choice but to correct our egos. So if the society doesn't support the Institute of Marriage so much today, then what? Maybe we're struggling so badly and we're so concerned with people getting married. What's the benefit of marriage? What's the benefit of living together? Live in a society, eat, do all the things, use all the conditions that are given to you. What's the benefit of marriage? The benefit from marriage is truly not there. There is none if you ask in such a way like you ask now. I have nothing to answer you. I have nothing to answer. So why am I getting married in 2 days? That I don't know. I'm truly looking at you and I don't understand why you're doing this. Really? Should I cancel it? No. Is there some meaning to it? Meaning there is in life, because we need to, nevertheless, a person can't be alone. With all that's there, if we move with the flow of the world according to our egotistical desire, for sure it's a loss. It's for sure that it's a loss. So we nevertheless need to think in the direction of correction, how we correct our lives in such a way that we'll be able to stand each other and even enjoy the fact that they're together and beside us, and also to bring children to this world so it'll be to the delight of the children and the relatives and everyone. We need to continue life and to see not where our ego is taking us, because it's always taking us in the wrong directions, but rather how we nevertheless will arrange this, correct this. Although there are many advisors, I see that it's not helping. No. Lior asks, today in the time of the quick satisfaction, people don't even court each other. There's no patience for that. What is courting according to Kabbalah, and do we need to court? According to Kabbalah, there's no such thing at all. Why are you asking according to Kabbalah? As if Kabbalah deals with something that has to do with this world. Kabbalah helps a person reveal the upper force, the Creator. The wisdom of Kabbalah is a method for the revelation of the Creator to the creature in this world. Meaning, if I want to discover the upper force, the Creator, God, that is managing and caring and arranging all of reality, then I can carry this out through a method called the wisdom of Kabbalah. But it doesn't come in order to help me. It helps, but in a kind of an indirect manner, somewhat also. In understanding this life, in sorting them somehow in a more orderly fashion and nicely. Of course, not in running after all kinds of nonsense that people are running after. And to make our life more orderly and calm. Yes, the wisdom of Kabbalah does give us that, but it's not its purpose. Let's say that's a side effect of it. It's a positive side effect of it. A positive thing that comes from it, but it's accompanying. Daniel's asking, it's not a secret that men don't understand women and women don't understand men. What's the most important thing that a man can understand about a woman? What's the most important thing a woman can understand about a man? That they can complete each other also in their characteristics, also in their common life, also sexually. And all the matters of life, we are constructed in such a way that a man completes a woman and a woman completes a man. We just need to know how to come to that complementing. That's the problem. And the main thing is, again, that each will be concerned with the other being satisfied from him, in some measure at least. Levana is asking, what do you think about the disastrous phenomena in my eyes which is called Pol Yamua, having relationships with several people, even though everyone knows it's open marriage, everyone's fine, and it's contradictory to the homogeneous nature of man. And is it primitive in its perception? Is it not? What's going on here? In all cultures, so far, the woman belongs to a man, and several women too, in most cultures, would belong to one man, but there was never such a thing where couples would intermix in such an active way in one apartment, and all these orgies that they're doing today. We do see such examples in ancient Rome, in ancient Greeks, even not so ancient in the Middle Ages. We could see that they did such things, the aristocrats. But actually, this was not the main thing. This was something that was out of the ordinary. And what's happening today, it was like with certain elites, etc. I don't think that this culture can extend for long, and that it strengthens the relationship between a husband and wife. According to the laws of nature, it can't be. We don't see this in any species or any animal. It could be that there's five or six females to a male, but not that it's in such a way that it has no order like is done by people now. It's a phenomena. It's a cultural, it's a fashionable thing. It's our egoistic will to receive today. Our ego is now in its finite, final state of its development. Therefore, it's bringing us such amorphic forms of development, warped forms. There's another phenomena that Galit is asking. What does Kabbalah say about the phenomena of a lack of desire for physical contact, relationship? They're saying that they're asexual or unsexual. This is something that's happening. Kabbalah talks about laws or roles. A person is a desire for pleasure, to enjoy. That's called in Kabbalah the will to receive. The desire to receive. This desire grew and grew all the time. And about several dozens of years ago, it started to kind of go down. There's kind of like a glissando. It started dissipating slowly or diminishing. And today we can see that it's last stages. It's called the general crisis. Therefore, in such a way, we don't want anything. People don't want to even live. Moreover, to enjoy from all kinds of things, the regular things, but rather they're willing to do something to just not waste their energy on it. So somehow, yes, but to really enjoy actively from all kinds of things, they're not capable. To invest, to pay, no. And that's what we see. Therefore, eventually, we're advancing to a state in which we will be very passive. We won't want to do anything, even for the sake of attaining pleasure. But give me a pill, something that I can, without moving from my place, to see all those things on the stage. Give myself some bullet, and that's it. These are the final stages of the burnout of the will to receive. David brings a quote from America. Man and woman merited, divinity dwells with him. If not, fire burns them. What is that? These are spiritual matters. Don't take sentences from the Torah and expect to understand them according to our life. It's not talking about man and woman, male and female in this world. There's no ramification to that. No. Rabbi Akiva was a great Kabbalist. He was talking about these two forces, positive and negative, which are called in Kabbalah, man and woman, and how we can combine them through the middle line between them, and then they can complete each other between them, and through the right connection between them, come to great attainment. Whereas, if they're in a connection between them without any resistance between them that is suitable, then they create a short and the fire burns them, as we call it. So is there such a possibility of coming to connection, love between people? If every person resists his ego, then they connect in the way that they resist each one of their egos, and what we need to replace. I care for your ego, and you care for my ego. What's that matter of resistance to the ego? No, man. It's the force of resistance. What is to resist the ego? What is that opposite force that resists my ego? Mine or in me first? I need to accept it. The importance of attainment of connection. The goal, you mean? Yes? And then Merav asks, if so, we reach spiritual love? Yes. Let's say we draw here something that has to do with love. Love. And here, one egotist, and here, a second egotist. Each annuls his ego, concedes it, and then I receive into me her ego, and she receives into her my ego. Each cares for the other. That's it. And that's how we work. So there's already something common between us. So there's a common matter between us. My part in her and her part in me. What's caring for her ego? I'm willing to compliment her, and she's willing to do the same for me. Each knows the weaknesses of the other, the habits of the other. And that's how we get along. I need to love her weaknesses, her habits, and she needs to do the same for me, for mine. And that's how we, and why? Because what's important for us here, from this common thing that we're doing, that we come to love. So even before we start to engage in the concession of our ego and common compliments, then we need to hold that love between us, that goal. Yes, that needs to be one, the love. From that, there will be two and three. We need immense forces to hold on to that love. That's the importance that needs to constantly, we need to have the constant importance of the goal. Can couples give each other that importance? Yes, by giving an example all the time. I need to show it, that I am doing this for you, but in a way that I won't do it just like that. I do it on a condition that I'm doing this because I expect that I will receive in return the same relationship, the same attitude. And this game becomes mutual, where each thinks of the other, and each understands that by this, he receives from the other an attitude that he won't receive from anyone else. So it's worthwhile to do. Because altogether, we're egotistical. We do everything because it's worth it for us. So to make from our couple relationship something that is worthwhile. Nathan asks, what happens when one side doesn't concede his ego? Do we need to wait? We don't. No, we need to give an example how I concede my ego. Sorry, ask. There's no more than example. It's the most beneficial thing there is. Sarah is asking, do we need to continue to hold on to marriage when love dissipates? What is love? That connection that's called love. No, there isn't love here. We're not talking about love here. We're talking about habit becoming a second nature. Habit. And love is something I don't understand. In no place is there a matter called love. It's rather, we just take some word, some excitement or inner impression, and we call it love. That's it. We need to build relationships in all the generations. It's been that way, that no one would build upon that word of love something that would last dozens of years later. So there's no love, or is there love? There's no love. What's love? You just drew it, and you said that our goal is love. Yes, but what is love? That we are building for ourselves a good life, that we're holding each other, that we support each other, that we want to build a nest and children and everything in an orderly, nice way. And that is called love. That's called the calculation with importance, with the recognition and understanding and concession, with all those things. Love is something that, oh, that's feelings and that's it. No, it's not good. There needs to be here really a completely form of relationship. And we need to prepare for this, our couples for this. Hila is asking, I think that loyalty is the most important thing in a good relationship. Loyalty for what? Loyalty for us, first of all, being friends. First of all, friends. I for her and her for me. Friends. That I really am willing to do for her no matter what. We're simply making a certain agreement. It's like a ketuvah, the marriage agreement. You and me, I and you, we sign the fact that there is a connection between us. There's between us a real arvut, a mutual guarantee, responsibility between us, where each is a guarantor to the other that he won't let him fall, that he'll help him, support him. And that's how we work on this in a mutual manner all the time. It's kind of like a common egotistical calculation. Of course, what else is there more between two egotisticals? I wish it would be like that. Yes, a common egotistical calculation. What's bad with that? That we connect. Instead of two bodies, we are building for ourselves a good life, as we're truly missing, each of us is missing each other, and we can each complete each other, and that's why we agreed to be together. Why not? Otherwise, what is, I love you, you love me, and what's next? What's tomorrow? Rather, we today are making a calculation. That we will be friends. First of all, friends. No one will do something bad to the other, won't cause bad to the other. Miki's asking, is there any place for the tradition where there were arranged marriages by the parents before them? Yes, of course. For many generations, is there room to bring that back? No, today people don't even want to hear their parents. From age 10 or even a little bit more, maybe they're already not listening to what the parents are telling them. We are living in a completely different world. Yes? Education for couples, there's a few questions. What would you actually teach, and from what age the children, the youth, for being couples, for relationships, what would you give them? We think that relationships as couples are something special. It's not something special. We need to give the education for connection from the ages of 2 or 3. A child in the beginning can't even play with someone, yes? From the age 2 or 3, he starts to play with other children. We need from that point to start to teach him how to be in connection with others. The wisdom of the circle, the wisdom of connection, the wisdom of concession, the wisdom of playing with the other and so on. All those things need to be given to a child so that he will understand and know how to use it. Then, after that, when they grow up, we need to expand those concepts of connection. That there's also connection between the sexes. Meaning, what is connection? Connection is considered that in all my desires, in all my inclinations, all my drives and etc. that I have, I am willing to connect with another, with one, with two, with ten, with the big environment, and so on. When all kinds of desires grow in me, I also put them into them, how, and care for them with understanding how to connect to others. Where all of a sudden I have a sexual drive in me, which divides everyone to men and women, to relatives and distant people, hated and loved. Loved ones, I need to know how to use this sexual drive in order to be connected to the society in the right way. Like with everything else. Therefore, we need to teach this. The method exists. The wisdom of Kabbalah explains this to us. We need to learn how to be in a circle, how to connect, how to reveal the importance in all the forms of tendency for connection or rejection. And we need to learn. I would do it really, I would obligate everyone to learn this, because without this, it's clear that we are missing a lot in life. David is asking, I didn't understand according to Rav's words, if Kabbalah does not relate to a man and woman and their role in this world, and it's attained only in the spiritual worlds, then what's the wisdom of Kabbalah can help us with? No, that's not its goal. Let's put it that way. It's not its purpose. Let's say these are side phenomena from the wisdom, study of the wisdom of Kabbalah, because it cares in the connection between us in order to raise us to a higher spiritual degree where we will be able to discover the essence of life, the purpose of life, why we live, what's the meaning of our life, how we can open the upper world while you're living here and now. How to know how these forces operate on reality in general. How to get along with this, with these forces. How to get along with past, present, and future. That's what the wisdom of Kabbalah gives us. And our life as couples and relationships is something that has to do with our bodies, the human bodies. These are small and temporary issues. But you have to concede. I'm not canceling those things. I'm just saying there's this and there's that. There are things that are more global, that are above life and death, that are truly associated with the world, and a person is also associated with that. And there are things that are kind of corporeal matters. Of course, along the way, we need to arrange those too, undoubtedly. But it's not that the wisdom of Kabbalah deals with this specifically. It's something higher. We have hundreds of viewers on our Facebook Live right now, and they're writing to you many forms of gratitude and thanks for what you're giving right now, for the tips and advice. Nurit, for example, says, she's a viewer and she's very happy with Rav's discuss it, really solving all the problems with our common things and with a lot of good, very good. Shaul asks, for example, if a person sees he can't concede, what would you advise him? We need to learn this. You don't know how much you're benefiting if you concede. You think that by conceding, you're canceling your ego. And maybe it's the opposite. By conceding, you're actually filling your ego. You're even complimenting yourself. Think about it. What you're going to profit here. Instead of quarreling and throwing, maybe you're moving by a very suitable mate for you, and because you can't concede, I'm like that, and that's it. You won't get along with anyone that way. And it's to the contrary. Through the concession, you can find the support and complement that you won't be able to supply to yourself ever. We need to talk about this and to sum it, and by that, we need to see in the systems of life that that's how you're living with each other. So try to put in this matter of mutual concession, I for my beloved and my beloved to myself, as we call it. And then in such a way, you will discover in this mutual concession, the way I drew this, in mutual concession, you discover here, this common place that you discover is called neshama, soul. That is your soul. This is what you are eventually building. Between the couples, there's a soul. Then there will be a soul. Then there will be a soul. Where I concede myself towards someone, I annul myself towards someone with my ego, and I accept the other as part of me, and then that's what happens, where man and woman, divinity dwells between them. This common place between them is called the divinity, Shekhinah. So also Neshama, Shekhinah, it's the same thing. Yes, yes, it's a place for the revelation of the Creator. And what's love above? That's what I'm saying, is that it's for the sake of love we're doing this, to start with. But we're actually building everything between us. And then man and woman, Shekhinah, divinity between them. And divinity is the revelation of Creator. He's revealed here, in this common place. I really want to ask, when a person concedes, there's a certain, maybe Israeli sensation, it's like, ah, you got screwed here. You're a weakling. It's very, kind of like being, we're infantile. How, you have to think, how am I going to concede her? I'm macho with a, so limited with a little head. Well, okay, but humanity is like that. That's why I'm saying it's education. We need to educate people for this. Do we have maybe some advice? Because education is global. I don't know, till we get to it. Look at the next statistic. I need it for 2 days from now. Do you have it? I'm hearing now a man in his way. Is on his way home, they're meeting. What? Just to give up? To hold on? To swallow the frog? Sit and talk between you how you want to concede to each other, how you want to give up to each other. Not to cancel each other, but to give up each from himself for the other. To come to such things, such that the other will understand that the other is coming in his way, coming in his direction. And then we build some common place where this place is made up of concessions. And in this place of mutual concessions, you're discovering a mutual life. And this place will be called Shekhinah, Divinity, because it's above the ego of each of ours. And then in this place, the Creator will be revealed. That's what the wisdom of Kabbalah is teaching. So here it can also be between the friends. It's a principle. It's not necessarily between man and woman. Between two egotistical people. And when we're talking about couples here, specifically, yes, also, what's then? Then you're revealing the upper world, the external, you can see how you can exist for eternity. You receive super upper forces, which are all given by that completion that you are willing to give to each other. But this is through the covenant between you. Through an agreement or the ketuvah. This is actually the whole matter of connection. Efrat is asking whether finding my mate, whether it's a male or female, is that a matter of fate or is it in man's control? No, it's under man's control. We need to check this and relate to it in a matter-of-fact manner. What does that mean? If whether he's suitable for me or not, is he in agreement or is he in the direction of connection or not? I have many girlfriends who are, they're single and they have no desire. It's not that they're not finding, they're not even looking. Meaning, I don't know if they're relating to it that it's in their hands or it's their fate that is not sent to them from above their mate. No one sends anything from above. No one sends anything from above. We need to search, but we need to search in a serious manner. as I am searching for a partner, and for this partner to be like me, understanding me, and that he has a willingness for mutual concession, and to build such a connection between us that in the place where each concedes to the other, but each of us, and not that I'm waiting for the other to concede and then he's waiting for me to concede and so on, but rather as we teach in the group where we conceded ourselves, that's where the family or the group or the soul is a place for the revelation of the Creator. That's it. Lee is asking, is it right that strong, independent women are a threat to men? What would you recommend to them? I don't recommend to place with forcefulness. It's not even a point here, because relationships need to be built on complement and not by each suppressing the other. It's actually to the contrary. There needs to be a never-ending example that I'm conceding. I'm conceding, I'm canceling myself for the sake of showing the other that I am willing to do so. And then the other won't have a choice and he will do so like me too. And then we will have more and more of a common place where each concedes himself to the other. And that's how we will come to building the Shekhinah, divinity. Yogev says that the more we get married later, there's a better chance of successful marriage. Is there any effect of the age on marriage? Yes, but it's not necessarily about age, but more on the people and how educated they are for that.
Mickey.
Ask Shush. Mickey asks, you talked about the fact that you conceded and Rabash conceded to his wife. Can you give an example of things that you conceded to your wife? Almost not. But she conceded a lot. I gave up by getting married. Because really, it was many years ago in Russia, in 1972, and maybe 1971, and I didn't want to get married. I wanted to immigrate to Israel. My parents asked and said that you should get married, and it's worthwhile for you to be already married, and then I listened to my parents. I gave up over that, and that cost me several more years that I had to stay there because I was refused the right to come to Israel. But that's where we moved on from there. But really, in my whole life, I can say that I gave up a very little compared to what my wife had to give up. Yes, that's how it is. Well, what can you do? That's in all things, in everything. Also with my businesses, and also with my regular life, and also in my family life, and my engagement in Kabbalah, and all those things. Really, I can't imagine to myself how much she did. Really. A whole lot. I wouldn't find in myself such forces. Eddie's asking more than that. It sounds like women are more concessionist. Women are more ready for that than men to start with. But our question is, today, while we're all in this crisis, we don't discover this. We don't see this, sadly. But I think it's a protective force of theirs that they don't want to suffer. They don't want to enter a bad deal to start with. Is it right that a woman would give the example for concession to the man if they're already married? Yes. If they're married, she can do that, yes. But again, it's a question of how much a man understands this, because a man is like a child until he understands that he has to also do so, and it's hard for a man. There needs to be education for this. There needs to be guidance here. Our problem is that we don't receive guidance. I'm saying we're talking about men to start with. The problem is more with men than it is with women. The fact that women don't want to get married and bring children, it's because in advance they're despaired from men already. And there's almost no hope that they will get from men the right things that they want. There are many people asking personal questions about your life. Mine? No, it's not interesting, because I'll tell you, I'm not an example, because I engaged my whole life in, today I'm 70 years old, soon 71, and from a very young age, even before I got married, I started to engage in the purpose of creation, the essence of creation, and for that, I also studied in the university and other places, and therefore my entire life is around the spiritual engagement I have. Therefore, it's not an example for others. There's nothing to learn from that. Okay, it's too bad. It's actually what's interesting to our audience. Dudi? I can just say one thing. I am not an example. I wish for you a much more correct, true life, balanced, that is calm and pleasant more than I did. And it was my fault. Well, is that how it is in nature? The opera is not an example. We kind of expected, according to the questions, people are expecting for you to be a model for something. No, it's completely not right. That's completely not right, because anyone who's greater than his friend, his inclination is greater. One does not do a mitzvah unless he fails in it. And therefore, all the true great ones are those who have been through many blows, many transgressions, all kinds of problems, and by them, they nevertheless overcame and continued on that path. We need great study in that, and not that is kind of a talith that is all turquoise. There's no such things in life. Therefore, also our generation, through all the problems and all this garbage that is dropped on it, eventually comes to being all good. We'll ask the last question with which we started the program today, and it was also the advertisement that that brought us to ask questions. Is there a chance to remain together all life long? We gave an answer to that. It's first to know how to give up to the other. What we get through that giving up, through that concession, we build the holy divinity between us, a place for the revelation of the Creator. That has to be. Otherwise, relationships don't hold. Why doesn't relationship hold today? Because it needs to bring a greater achievement in this life, not just to bring children, but to give birth to the spiritual attainment. And that is not existent. And therefore, it doesn't exist. But the moment we understand that we can attain by this, you will see your world in your life. Truly eternal, whole life, unlimited. Then it's worthwhile. If a couple understands that by this, it attains whatever it wants, unlimited in all the worlds, of course, they will be able to give up a little for their ego and see his partner in life as a partner in spiritual attainment, in eternal life, in the fact that he attains his life with endless, no unlimited things of abundance. Well, read from the Zohar, it writes, when a person marries a woman, he adheres to the Shekhinah. Because prior to marrying a woman, the Shekhinah does not dwell upon him, because Shekhinah is not dwelling in a flawed place. And when the divinity does not dwell on him, it builds from him 12 upper gifts. Hence, anyone who dwells without a woman is without good. As it is written, it's not good for a man to be alone. Yes, but we need to understand that woman is something we build, like a man. And the young couple that gets married, a guy and a girl, are not man and woman. husband and wife. It's by them trying and arranging themselves, building a common place between them, which is called Shekhinah, divinity. Then from each of them will be called husband and wife. Otherwise, no. Otherwise, it's just, let's hope that you will be able to attain the right education, the right forces for the right connection, and to discover eternal spiritual life in the connection between you, so that certainly the whole relationship will be a blessing. Rav Lightman, thank you very much. Racheli, Mazal Tov, thank you, thank you. Gedach to us all. Thank you to our viewers. Next week we will talk about the education of children. Start writing your questions already. Kabbalah time. Good week to you.